even when we were kind of pitching to the first people, we were like, yeah, we're looking to do 2025. And we had to go back to those guys and be like, actually,
let's do it now.
Let's do it. Like, it's the ball's rolling. And
yeah, I think we had this super high aspiration to get 20 resorts on. I'm like, I don't know, it's going to be hard to convince these guys. And then we blew by that, launched with 30. And I think we're going to have 40 here in the next couple of weeks plus.
Welcome to Trail Effect. I am your host, Josh Blum. Trail Effect is a show that dives into the stories behind trails, the communities that embrace trails, and the people who rely on trails as a way of life. The goal of this show is to turn the stories you will hear from our guests into useful knowledge that can be applied to your community while providing some entertaining and inspirational content. Guests on Trail Effect include trail builders, board members, community leaders, volunteers, and regular people who really enjoy trails. For episode 168, we've got Rob Brown and Joey Foresta, co-founders of the Loan Pass. The Loan Pass is your North American Gravity Bike Park Pass, and it's brand new for 2024. Rob and Joey teamed up to create the Loan Pass, and it launched in March with 30 resorts and shuttle services, with additional locations queued up to land on the Loan Pass in the near future. Tune in to learn more about Joey, Rob, the Loan Pass, along with some bonus racing conversations near the end. Cooley Creative is the title sponsor for this episode. They design and build custom websites, as well as help companies with branding, photography, and e-commerce. Cooley Creative was started in Wisconsin, but is now based out of Bend, Oregon. Jared from Cooley Creative is a friend of mine. We've traveled together on multiple mountain bike trips, and sometimes he sends it. For more information about Cooley Creative, head on over to www.dudejustsendit.com. Yes, that's right, www.dudejustsendit will get you to the Cooley Creative website, so check it out. Cattle Mountain Apparel, the brand that was built by travelers, hikers, trail runners, and mountain bikers, with the motto of venture far, laugh hard. While I definitely use Kettle Mountain apparel for mountain biking, Kettle Mountain is also my go-to choice for daily wear as it is super functional and comfortable. Kettle Mountain apparel also offers a lifetime gear repair program with the goal of extending the life of their products while reducing waste in the process. If you ever damage any of your apparel, Kettle Mountain will repair it for free for life. By using the affiliate link found in the show notes or on the Trail Effect website, a small commission will come back to the Trail Effect podcast, which helps to cover the cost of expenses for keeping this show going. Now on to the Trail Effect to learn more about the Loan Pass with Joey and Rob. But yeah, so back to what we were talking about before I hit record. Loan Pass got on my radar, I want to say it was last fall. I saw it on Instagram, and then when I was talking to Max, his family has Howler Bike Park, Max Penny, he had brought it up to me that he had been talking to you guys. And so he was probably the first person I had talked to that brought this on my radar.
Cool. Yeah, no, Max is, he's super cool dude, and Howler seems like a sweet spot. I need to get out there. I've been meaning to, but that's cool. That's really cool.
Yeah, they're one of the first people to come on the pass. There's a couple of like early instigators or whatever you want to call them, like early adopters. And Max is a big homie. So, you know, there's actually been a few other people that have like thought about doing this, and they hit him up and he was like, no, I'm already involved with the Loan Pass. So he's a mega homie.
Yeah. Always grateful for like the first handful for sure.
Yeah.
Took a bit of a leap of faith.
There was a couple too that it took them like 6 months, but we knew they were coming on. Like Massanutten was an early adopter. Max Howler was an early adopter.
Tamarack.
Yeah. Wolf gave us a good vote of confidence, I guess, in those early stages.
Yeah.
And it's like, you got to build the snowball. So it takes like five.
Nico.
Yeah. He was a homie.
He
gave us both Rock Creek and Canoga right early on. So.
Yeah, and the whole concept is it's an awesome concept. I mean, obviously, it's working in the ski industry, right? Or for snow sports. And I would liken this to more of like the Indy Pass style of things, which is pretty awesome. And maybe that's the origin story behind this. I love to ride bike parks, and I don't have many too close to me, but there are parks on this list that I would definitely go to, or that I have definitely gone to. I mean, that you guys have as partners already, and there's so many more to be had. And I think timing with this now in our current environment is also really good.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's great.
I mean, you should talk a little bit about, you know, origin story and, you know, kind of how it started, because initially it was Rob's idea, and, you know, we're just riding buddies, but, you know.
Let's talk about what you guys, let's get to the story pre-Loan Pass.
Yeah.
Either Rob or Joey, doesn't matter. Either one of you two, like, kind of talk about how you got into mountain biking and where, like, this path to Loan Pass.
Yeah, it's, you know, my story and Joey's story are kind of similar. Joey's just a little bit better at riding bikes than I am, but we're both kind of like been pro racers in some form or fashion. I'm just a local pro. Joey obviously went, and he can talk about going to the World Cups and stuff. But yeah, I've only been biking for like 10 years, I'd say. Like 2014 is when I kind of first, you know, obviously we played around with bikes in high school and stuff, but I was racing moto back then. And then 2014 or so, I was running like 4 miles a day, and I was wearing out my knees, and I was only like 24, 25. So I was like, well, I'm going to start biking. So then I just like went and bought a bike, and that was kind of like my first nice bike. And yeah, I just was like, oh, this is sick. It's like moto, but I still get my exercise. And yeah, I just like fell in love with it. So I started biking like every day for multiple hours a day. And yeah, just kind of progressed from there, and just still love it. But I also ski. Obviously, I live in Utah, Salt Lake City, on the Wasatch Front here. And, you know, growing up in Utah, I was lucky enough to go to a nice school, and they like took us up to Sundance every Monday instead of going to class. You know, so I've just been skiing my whole life, and that's part of living in Utah. So like this year I skied like, you know, 40 days or something, which is pretty decent. Pretty stoked on that. Not a 100-day guy like some real true avid skiers, but nonetheless, I have an Icon pass, and, you know, I bought, you know, local season passes to skiing and stuff, and there's just nothing for bikes. And so, you know, last season with racing and then just riding, you know, I had a Brian Head pass, I had a Deer Valley pass, I had a Park City pass, and it's just like, this is absurd. Like, why do I have 4 season passes? And then plus I go out and race, so I'm buying 4 or 5 day tickets to Rock Creek, to Wind Rock, to all these different, you know, Tamarack, and buying all these. And I'm like, well, sitting on the lift with Joey, I was like, well, why don't we just do a mountain bike season pass? Like, there's all these other pass products popping up. Indie passes are around now. Everybody has kind of an idea of how it works, what it is. So it should be a no-brainer to go do a mountain bike one. And we both love the sport, and so I was like, let's go do it. We both have all the industry contacts we need. So it just seemed like a no-brainer. I was like, well, okay. It's not that, can't be that hard, which it actually is really hard. But we were like, oh, Joey knows marketing in the bike industry. I know some business stuff. And yeah, so we went out, decided to get it done. Now we're 9 months in, like, wow, what did we get into? Trying to convince Joey to quit his job, and so it's been a journey for sure. But I'll let Joey talk about how he got to the same point I did.
Yeah, no, man. I mean, I just grew up, you know, racing BMX, riding BMX, and we have a really good scene out here. So, you know, just live down the street from Cody Kelly, and, you know, not far from Mitro Pilato, and so, you know, we all rode together. I was younger, so I looked up to those guys, and Cody took me under his wing, got me good. And he switched over to mountain biking. So, you know, I was a shadow. I just switched over as well. But yeah, things started rolling good. Raced World Cups for a couple years, you know, had some injuries, kind of realized, okay, I don't think this is what I want anymore. And so kind of transitioned out of racing World Cup 2 to 3 years ago, and just kind of getting into the industry, started working for a local company here, Fazari, now Ari.
I heard it was just I now.
Yeah, just I now. So I'm glad you're following. But yeah, you know, so that's been great. And then, yeah, Rob just had this idea all but 9 months ago. So we've just been cranking at that. And but yeah, I'm still working at Ari, still in the industry, still, you know, riding and kind of doing our thing. So.
So you might laugh at this. The first time you got on my radar, Joey, was through a Rich Drew video.
There you go. I get that so much between him and like Mo and Hannah and like April's Astros videos. I get that way more than anything else. It's so funny.
Yeah. And I've known Rich for a handful of years now and had him on the podcast way early on. And then also he's, you know, brought some of his clinics to where I live as well. So it's, I'm, you know, paying attention to what he's doing, but I think it was the game of bike in Sedona.
Yeah. With Kyle Warner.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a cool video. That was fun.
Yeah. Well, let's get into, so you talked about the origin story a little bit, but let's get into some of the details from the consumer perspective and inside of how it works, you know? And then also like you have other benefits. Like I just saw right before we popped on that you have another partner that isn't really part of, they don't have a pass, but they're a downhill series, right? Southwest Downhill.
I'll let Joey talk about the partnership because that's kind of his gig there. But yeah, as far as the pass works for consumers, pretty straightforward, right? So you buy a pass, $250, you buy it for yourself, just like you would a ski pass or something along those lines, right? So you have your name, your picture on there, and then that gives you access to any of our destinations on the pass, right? And we're announcing destinations weekly. We just announced 6 more in the last 2 weeks, so we're freaking stoked on that. But yeah, $250, you buy this pass, and then you get essentially 3 days. So you get 2 free days riding at any one of our destinations, plus a third day discounted, and it's usually 50% off. So you can think about it, 3 days of riding at any of these destinations. Plus, there's all these perks associated with each destination. They're on a destination by destination basis, but lodging, food, bike rentals, and then, you know, they love to give discounts on lessons and coaching and all of those things. So, you know, lots of great additional perks to buying the pass. And then kind of recently, we've started to figure out all the destinations, get the roster locked down for this year. So we started looking at, you know, additional partnerships. I think that downhill one, I'll let Joey talk about it. But
yeah, I mean, that one specifically, I don't know how much you know about that new Southwest series, but just popping up, you know, on the radar here just a couple months ago. One of my good friends, you know, he's spearheading it and he's doing a great job. And, you know, the idea is really just is to incentivize and help people, you know, whatever they want to do, ride, race, get new gear, whatever, you know, we're putting together a really good kind of package of perks for all the pass holders as well on, you know, discounts for whatever they might want to do.
Hope later on, you know, like, you know, hotels and bike shops and different things, you know, we want to kind of spur all those different partnerships. So kind of look out on the Instagram or different places on the website where, you know, we'll be announcing different things.
I like the way you're doing this, that it's, you know, 2 days, and I didn't even know that the third, you could get a third day half off, but, you know, focusing on the 2 day thing, like for me, if I can work a trip the way I personally would like to work a trip, I go to a park for at least 2 days. And I spend that first day, like kind of getting to know the lay of the land, doing what I think a lot of us know is like pre-ride, right? So we kind of get to know all the trails. And the next day I come back and either ride what I had the most fun on and do laps on it, or work on like some kind of skills, like maybe a trail that kind of gets me out of my comfort zone and I want to get better at it. So I think it's awesome that you guys are really doing that and incentivizing, you know, at least 2 days at any given place.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of the whole idea too. And, you know, going back a little bit about just kind of the origin story, it's like, we talked a lot about different ways you can do it, right? And that model of 2 days, I think just makes the most sense for everybody, because we really don't want to cannibalize the season pass holders for these destinations, either resorts, bike parks, you know, that's what they, you know, that's what they eat with, right? So the idea is really just trying to help them hit capacity and fill empty space. And so that model really helps in protecting them, and also for riders that want to try different places, that's the perfect model for them.
No, I just think like Joey said, it makes a ton of sense for people that want to travel, and then also for that like kind of curious, you know, more intermediate biker that wants to get out to some destinations but doesn't want to commit to a $400 or a $600 season pass to their to their local spot. So we're hoping to kind of spur a little bit of more of the bikers that are maybe, you know, curious about going to bike parks where, hey, these trails look super fun, you know, and they're lift access. So let's go up there, check them out, and, you know, hopefully tap into a little bit of that beginner intermediate market that maybe isn't ready to buy a season pass, but wants to get out there. And this is a great way to do that.
Yeah. And, you know, for somebody like me where I live, I don't have a local place, right? And so I'm going to have to travel. And so this provides opportunity to go north. I live in the upper Midwest in Wisconsin. I could go north up into the UP. There's a couple places up there. I think Marquette Mountain and then Keweenaw Adventure Company has a shuttle service as well in Copper Harbor. You know, or I could go south to Chestnut, which is a ski and now mountain bike resort about 3 hours south of me. You know, so it's just for riders like me that don't have that local resort that wouldn't buy a season pass because it doesn't make sense for me to buy a season pass. It's also really good.
Yeah, no, stoked too. So
he's going to be super stoked.
Yeah. We just got this contract back from Boyne Highlands as well. So you can add that to your list. And then finalizing details with Spirit over in Duluth. So you're going to have like a real nice spot of mountain bike parks to go to this summer.
I literally just drove past Spirit Mountain yesterday.
There you go.
I had to go north for my day job. And I had to drive, it was an hour and a half northwest of Duluth that I had to go to. And so I drove through Duluth twice, right past Spirit Mountain. So
Spirit's coming on. We're working on the contract there. And Highlands is signed, which was, they're super awesome up there. And that park looks fun. So we're planning a UP trip this summer too. But anyway, that's late breaking news for the podcast. So not announced yet. First to hear it.
Awesome. We love to break news on the podcast. I was able to break news with Sean Leader a couple of months ago on his Southern Gravity bike building business. And so, and actually race team. So we'll take breaking news whenever we can get it.
Yeah. No, we're stoked on the kind of that upper Midwest. You know, we got a bunch of stuff in Missouri, obviously Arkansas, but Midwest has come together really nice. Oh,
there we go. Did you hear that?
Yeah, that's fine. It adds flavor to the whole conversation. When you go to, if you do a UP trip, like you just talked about, we're going to definitely have to connect and maybe we need to get you lined up with some tour guides so you can get all the best riding.
110%. So yeah, we're planning on flying up sometime. We're working on the dates right now in June, maybe July, but most likely sometime in June. But yeah, get up, go to Chestnut, Boyne Highlands, Marquette, Copper Harbor, kind of make that journey on up. So
yeah,
super stoked. Looks so amazing. My family's all from Michigan, so I spent a lot of time on the lakes up there, you know, and Traverse City and Charlevoix, and we have a cabin right there in Mansalona, but never brought a bike, so I'm really pumped to get up to UP. It just looks so sick.
Yeah, Copper Harbor is my favorite place to ride, period. And it's, in theory, that's where my company's based out of, and so I have reasons to go there for that as well. Or it was started there, at least.
Yeah, we've been talking to the, curious what your take is, but we've been talking with the, what is it? The South Hills? There's two shuttle companies, Keweenaw Adventures signed and
East Bluff Bike Park.
Bluff Bike Park. So we're talking with them as well. So we could have potentially another location up there.
Yeah. East Bluff is actually owned by my boss. Aaron Rogers, the owner of Rock Solid Trail Contracting, owns East Bluff. Speaking of upper Midwest, have you had any discussions, and I can cut this out if we don't want to talk about this, but have you had discussions with Giants Ridge at all?
You know, I've reached out to them several different just cold emails, basically. But, warm introductions are always the best. And I haven't had the opportunity to get up to, you know, have somebody say, hey, you should talk to these guys yet. So they're definitely on the radar though.
Maybe that's a good way to transition into the loan pass from the perspective, the business perspective of like all these different shuttle companies and resorts. Like what's kind of like from their perspective, I guess, what is your sales pitch on your end?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I guess I'll take this one because I do most of the sales pitching.
Go for it.
But no, it's a pretty straightforward pitch, and the resorts have been, you know, the feedback from them has been great. They all love the idea. They're all used to kind of the ski industry and seeing what's going on with the Indy Pass. And a lot of our destinations are Indy Pass destinations as well. So they've seen great success just bringing in, you know, new people, new boots, so to speak, to their parks, which is what they want, right? They want new people coming in, spending money on dining and lodging and those types of things. But with the loan pass, we were able to actually build out kind of a model that makes a lot of sense. And they call it the yield, right? The bike park yield, what they get paid out at the end of the year is actually super high. So, you know, when we sell a pass, 85% of that pass goes back towards the resorts in some form or fashion. So we have a chunk of that that goes to marketing expenses, what we call shared marketing. And that's like, we have a list of affiliates that are actually going to go out to these destinations. Rich Drew, for example, you mentioned, he's going to host his the ride series at Loan Pass destinations exclusively this year. And so that's kind of a marketing expense. You know, we then become like a resource to those guys as far as, hey, we're going to send people up to you. We'll plug you into the network. And they love that. They need, not all the ski industry is plugged into the mountain bike world. And so that's been a major perk to these guys. But at the end of the year, we actually take and say, okay, what was the volume at each park? And then break up kind of the resort pool, so to speak, by volume. So, you know, if a park saw 2% of the total volume, they'd get 2% of the resort cut. So it's super fair for everybody. And, you know, we were curious at first how it worked with having both bike parks, shuttle companies, and resorts on the pass. But the volume has actually been pretty surprising to see, like somebody in like the Gravity Feed in Bentonville, you know, they're doing just as many people and just as much volume as, you know, Marquette or Tamarack, which is, you know, just it kind of just worked out that everybody is happy with how it's structured. So anyway, hopefully that's enough detail that people can get an idea of what's going on, but without sharing all the secret sauce.
Definitely don't want you to share all the secret sauce. Early on, when you started floating this idea to different resorts and business owners, like what was the reception, or do you have any like good funny stories from, you know, trying to like get this thing launched?
Do you have any stories?
There was definitely some good ones. So the conversations were always very different between shuttle companies, bike parks, and resorts. Very different. Like Rob said, the resorts, you know, they already understand the model and things like that, but they are like, well, you know, odds are you guys are not going to even make this happen. So don't even, they're like, don't waste my time kind of a thing, which is fair. The bike parks and shuttle companies were, I would say, a little bit easier, especially just because in our network, we know some of these people, but some people just kind of have a hard time or had a hard time grasping just the model in general and how they would use it and maybe some of the payout models as well too. But
yeah, I'd say the payout model, which it's super simple when you break it down, but it takes a little bit to explain it to some people, I guess. Anyways, it's been good. But the main thing was resorts. Well, I think there was so a little backstory, which is actually kind of funny too, but we had no idea, unbeknownst to us, there's another group, this guy in Canada that was trying to start a similar path. And we had no idea when we said, you know, last June, hey, let's put something together. So we started reaching out to resorts with, you know, hey, we're going to do a pass. It's 2 days, so third day discounted. Here's how we do the payout and stuff. And they're like, oh, have you heard of these other guys in Canada? And we're like, no, we haven't heard of them. And they're like, oh, they're doing the same thing. And so we ended up actually getting him on the phone and we're like, hey, so what's the deal? How many bike parks do you got? And he's asking us, how many bike parks do you have? And we're like, well, we've got these LOIs with these bike parks, you know, because we were actually starting to do letters of intent to work on the contracting. It is a process, right? Each resort is a big corporation. And so that's how we were doing it. We're like, do you have any LOIs? He's like, no, I just have, you know, really good connections and relationships in the industry. And I was like, well, we'd be interested in buying you. We got a little bit of investment and he wanted a partner. Anyway, it didn't work out because he didn't have anything. And I was like, well, we're willing to like purchase your company for, you know, any assets that you're holding. He's like, well, I just have relationships, so you should give me 30% of loan pass. And we're like, we're not giving you 30% of loan pass for no freaking reason for some relationships that you have.
So yeah, there's been some funny stuff. There's been a handful of other people. I think it's very fair to say we're the first ones with the idea.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, we've had probably what, 3 to 4 try to start kind of in the time that we've been working.
I know of at least 2, but
yeah,
I would say the thing that we did well and the thing that made us stand out is, well, one, we have connections in the industry, but 2, we spent probably 3 months full time. Like, we put a lot of time and energy into the business model, the business plan, the marketing materials, and really like fleshing out the idea before we went. And, you know, I'm a little bit of a sales guy, so I'm like, well, let's just go talk to people. But Joey was like, no, let's make sure we have our pitch dialed in and we got it done and made sure that we had an understanding of what this was going to look like before we went out and started pitching to people. And I think that made a huge difference. And then a little bit of the backing, like we started to get our website, our infrastructure, we have like really cool technology just built into the website. So all the databases and everything is in our website. And so that made a huge difference, I think, just the legitimacy that we were showing when we went out and pitched these guys.
We were pitching a plan, not just an idea, maybe.
Yeah.
Is a good way to say it. And whereas I think a lot of other people kind of had the same idea, but they were doing feelers, right? Rather than pitching a plan. So
honestly, like you say it like that, and I look at it from a trail building perspective, it's no different. You know, like if you're looking for funding for trail building and you go to a prospective funder or even go to get permission from say a land manager and you tell them you have an idea, they probably are going to tell you to pack sand. But if you bring an actual plan that they, even if they don't know what mountain biking is or understand this, they actually can wrap their head around what you're asking them to do. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly how it went for us. It's like, here's what we're going to do. And then, you know, they knew kind of the model from Indie Pass and Mountain Collective. So I was like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. And then, yeah, we need more mountain bikers. The mountain bike numbers are down a little bit. So that was another like, oh, we need this. This is perfect timing. And then, you know, having the legitimacy of like, okay, these guys have some tech, the website's going to be easy. It's not going to just be this joke of a pass, you know? So it all came together.
And it came together quick too. Cause when we were initially talking, what, it was probably June or July of last year. And then we were like, okay, well, it's probably not realistic to start in 2024. So let's shoot for 2025. And even when we were kind of pitching to the first people, we're like, yeah, we're looking to do 2025. And we had to go back to those guys and be like, actually,
let's do it now.
Let's do it. Like, it's the ball's rolling. And
yeah, I think we like had this super high aspiration to get 20 resorts on. I'm like, I don't know, it's going to be hard to convince these guys. And then we blew by that, launched with 30. And I think we're going to have 40 here in the next couple of weeks plus. Pretty pumped on doubling that goal. So.
And we're really not even into riding season unless you're talking just the Southeast.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. So, and we kind of missed the Southeast a little bit because we launched in March officially. So you could start using it then. So we missed that a little bit, but yeah, we'll be full steam ahead for most people.
Yeah. Luckily their season will pick back up probably in like October, you know?
Yeah.
So,
well, this will come out probably next week. Downhill Southeast, the first race of the US Open. or not the US, I'm getting all this wrong. Sorry about that.
The Monster Series.
The Monster Series is happening literally as we record this. You know, it's racing is this weekend, but we're recording this on a Friday, you know, so it's like the first race of that series, which is something I want to get into in a little bit as far as downhill racing goes, but you still got a lot of runway in the Southeast, I guess is where I was going with that.
Yeah, no, for sure. They do ride most of the year. So yeah, stoked. The Southeast is a good region for us. Midwest is just blowing up for us now, like I mentioned. And then, you know, we've got a good stuff going in New England, and then the West Coast. We're working on some really cool stuff with PNW and California, a lot of stuff coming online there here shortly. So keep an eye out for those.
Speaking of that, and this is going to get into the weeds a little bit. Have you ridden the bike park in San Diego yet? The newer one at the
Luis Año?
Yeah, Luis Año.
Yeah, I was there a couple months ago and they are doing a great job.
That's awesome.
Steve there. So I don't know, a little backstory there, and that would be such a good podcast. I'll have to link you guys up. But so Steve Ford, the guy who I think he's like general manager, maybe, I don't know his exact title, but he, you know, he was the one that started that whole project. And for people that don't know, it's on Indian reservation land. The La Jolla Indian Reservation, you know, has a bunch of land out there. But yeah, he got all of the funding raised to build a road, build all the trails, build, you know, the bike shop that they have. And they have some very, very big goals and aspirations, but it sounds like it's happening. And
yeah,
that's Steve's story to tell, but man, he's relentless. He just really wants to see mountain biking in SoCal, and he's working very hard to make it happen. So it's pretty cool. Pretty cool to see.
Yeah, I hear rumors about lifts going in and
yeah,
lots of different stuff. So anyway, could be pretty cool.
I've heard a rumor, and this is, I mean, maybe it's not a rumor because I heard of it on a different podcast. So I guess it's official, right? I heard that they may have the aspiration to try to become like the Whistler of the Southwest. It's a bold statement.
I think the aspiration's there. I mean,
yeah, the aspiration's definitely there.
Those guys are going hard. So
they are. So and honestly, they have a pretty good size hill. Yeah, it's a good mountain to work on, and you know, Whistler is definitely Whistler, but it's something very unique to SoCal that they didn't have before. And the jumps are built really well. The trails are built well. So, but yeah, I'll definitely link you guys up. You should have them on the podcast.
Yeah, I'd love to. They definitely have the population base around there too. I mean, because I think, and I could be wrong, because I don't know where every place is, but from that location, I think, or San Diego, I should say, I think the closest place is getting up closer to Big Bear, correct?
Yeah. So there's also Velocity Bike Park. So that's a pedal park.
Yep.
Also on the Lone Pass. But yeah, as far as like shuttle service, it's just Luis Año for now. I know that Velocity has some aspirations as well.
Big Bear is technically, you know, San Bernardino outside of LA too. So for San Diego, it's definitely the closest.
Let's talk about the golden era of bike parks, because that's what kind of how this thing like really can launch, right? Or really has launched. I mean, I started mountain biking in the 90s, and back then, if you rode a lift, it was basically accessing a fire road or something similar.
For sure.
And now we have shuttles that have, you know, opened the doors for places in, like the Southwest and like we're talking about in San Diego. I'm sorry, the Southeast, you know, specifically, but also San Diego. But then you also have e-bikes, you know? So yeah, I look at Nico's bike park, Ragkanuga, as like the poster child for how a pedal bike park can really work, and like people still pay to show up, which I think is incredible and awesome. Let's look at it from your guys' perspective and how that really helps this pass go in like the golden era of this downhill mountain biking.
Yeah, I think for us, it was like, as we looked at this, right? I think there's been previous mountain bike products, mountain bike parks pass and some different things, but maybe they didn't quite have the tech behind it to make it work. But also they were just all focused on ski resorts, right? And we're mountain bikers first, right? Not ski resorts first. And so we said, let's include everybody, right? Like Moab is one of my favorite spots to ride. And, you know, they've got Rock Creek, and then, you know, I don't know if you've been down to Jared's place, but like the stuff they're putting in there, the trails are just so much fun. And so let's build a pass around mountain bike destinations, not around ski resorts in particular. Not saying, you know, ski resorts, like, you know, they have some of the best infrastructure for biking and lifts, but, you know, we want to go to the places that are fun. And that includes shuttles like Bentonville, that includes bike parks like Jared's Place or Canoga, and then also like the resorts like Marquette or Tamarack or Burke. You know, Burke is plugged into the Kingdom Trails, and so let's see what we can do as far as mountain bike destinations and attracting mountain bikers to the pass, you know, not just people that go to the ski resorts. And I think everybody will benefit from that.
Yeah. And I think Nico is kind of one of the first ones. I know he helped Sean Leader kind of jumpstart Windrock a little bit too, but it's just this kind of perfect cocktail they've all figured out. It's like they're year round. You can ride all year. And frankly, mountain bikers don't care. They just want to ride sick trails. So if you have the sick trails and you have all the amenities that make it easy to access, you know, close to town, closer to town than most ski resorts, and, you know, and you have some infrastructure, whether you have to pedal or not, people just want to ride good trails. And so, especially in places where, you know, I would say that we're pretty lucky here in Salt Lake, because there's a lot of city built trails. There's a lot of very good trails to go and ride for free, but that's not the case everywhere. And so,
especially out east, right? Like everything's private. And so they figured out a nice model where it's like, okay, we got to own the land to build the trails. And so that does come with a little bit of a price tag, but people understand that, I think. So,
yeah. And at the end of the day, people just want to ride good trails. And so in areas where you're the closest good trails, people will pay.
Yeah. So. Free city trails are great, but once you can introduce a mountain biker to, like, you know, that hand-built flow berm trail at Jared's place, like double wide, or, you know,
that's maintained too.
That's maintained. And, or you go to Canoga and you ride, and then even like ride BMH and stuff. And, you know, that there's something to be said to maintenance and then that investment. And it's like, we want to introduce riders to that, that have an experience, you know, that maybe bought a bike and are just riding their local spot. So that's one of the things that we're excited about.
That's exactly why I push the pay-to-play model as much as I do through this podcast. I mean, I do believe that most of us, if not all of us, probably got into mountain biking through the free model, you know, through local municipalities, public land, or whatever your land access is. But at the same time, one of the biggest issues, especially now that we're facing, since we have so much more ridership, is that maintenance aspect of it. And how do you figure out a way to make it so it stuff just doesn't maintain itself for free. I mean, there's volunteers are incredible, but volunteers are, you know, they can only go so far. And so, and that's where like Nico's thing, especially Rad Canoga, like they're doing awesome maintenance there. And they live in a place that's located in a place that has actually a lot of really great public access. And it comes to, you know, I mean, they're right at the edge of Pisgah National Forest, you know, and then they have DuPont around the corner as well. You know, so they do have that public stuff, but they offer a product that, you know, the public land can't have, you know, and that's the maintenance. And it's an expected user experience.
I think Canoga is just in this, like, you know, I think some people have tried to mimic it, but it's actually funny because I think they benefit from Pisgah and all the people that attracts, you know, Asheville. And I love those trails, but technically you're not supposed to ride e-bikes there. And so I think they've just hit this really sweet spot where it's like, we're going to build sick trails. You can ride an e-bike here, which you can't ride at Pisgah. And then it's just turned into like this real, you know, just kind of got that magic to it. I don't know what it is, but yeah, great, great spot. When you ride those trails, you know, you're like, oh, okay, these are sick.
Yeah.
And that's what the experience is, right? Like, I think when you go to Jared's Place, they have that magic. I think Canoga has that magic. And, you know, there's just some parks where they have the trails and they've just built them and they get maintained. And then it's just like, you ride it and you're like, doesn't matter how good a rider you are too. It's like, I'll go there and it's like the most Jerry guy from Florida is there. and he's just lapping the thing. And then, you know, I'm an ex-pro racer and it's like, I'm clearing everything. And he's just stoked to clear this jump for the first, you know, the easiest jump on the line. But there's just something about, you know, when you get a good trail and a good magic going to it, the experience is great. So
let's transition. I wasn't totally planning on talking about racing and stuff, but since both of you are former pro racers, let's talk about racing a little bit. And let's talk about the rise of gravity racing in the US again, because it's pretty awesome to see. You know, maybe you can speak a little bit about the Southwest Downhill, because honestly, until I saw your Instagram post earlier today, I hadn't heard of it.
Yeah. There's so many popping up.
Yeah, there are. And it's great too, because I mean, and of course, this is just my opinion, but you know, growing up, there was, you know, there's a decent amount of US downhill racing, and then it died a little bit for sure. But I think it, in a lot of ways, it just wasn't sustainable, you know, partly because of ridership. There just wasn't enough ridership, you know, and then also too, it's just expensive to put on a good event. And looking at how Europe does it, you know, they have the IXS Cup. That's a great feeder into World Cup downhill racing, but World Cup downhill racing is what attracts all the eyes and really gets the everyday person out to go race their local series. And I think you kind of need that pinnacle series that you can go on the weekend and go watch the race at Rock Creek this weekend and be like, oh, I'm getting fired up for my local race at Rock Creek later this summer, you know, just watching the pros and doing those kinds of things. And so what I think is sick is that Clay Harper, who's, you know, was doing the US Open, still is, but growing it into the series, you know, he's taking the leap of faith and really trying to get the series off of the ground. And you need the more regional series to support the bigger series as well. And they don't, you know, they don't have to be the same ownership or anything like that. But that's what I think is rad about the Southwest series. It's, you know, they're going to Velocity and China Peak and, you know, just kind of staying in SoCal. And then all of those people are going to get fired up and, you know, go watch, you know, the Monster Series at Big Bear. So the more feeder series that we can do and get the, you know, we don't just want to watch the World Cup guys. We need to make sure that there's ridership in every region to support the sport as a whole, or else there's not going to be sponsorship money or anything like that. You know, we don't have Red Bull TV in the US. So unless you have people at the events, they're not profitable.
Yeah. We do have the Gravity Co-op.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And that's what's so sick to see. And I know that it's been a grind for those guys. And, you know, I think Clay trying to support them too. It's big, big undertaking, but you know, I wasn't at Windrock, but I could go and watch those guys. That is so huge. I don't have to just look at Instagram and see a podium picture. Like, I'm more invested. I understand what happened at the race. And I don't know. That's my take on it. I think it's great. And I think the amateur ridership has to also grow, and the pros need the amateurs and the amateurs need the pros, and we can grow the pie if we have focus on each level of racing, is my opinion.
Well, I think what's your take, Joey, as far as like, I've been an enduro racer mainly because I, you know, I got into sport kind of on that let's pedal my bike for a couple hours and exercise side of things. I feel like that's kind of actually gone down a little bit as far as, you know, influence and ridership. And I, you know, from what I've seen, a bunch of the pros have kind of migrated back to downhill, and might be because, okay, they realize maybe the World Cup, I don't know if this is the case, but maybe they were like, the World Cup enduro has kind of fallen apart a little bit and there's not as much money there for to be a pro. And they're realizing, okay, you got to be a downhiller. And so that's kind of, and then, you know, that's kind of transitioned a lot of those racers back into downhill. I'm not sure, but anyway, kind of interesting to think about as a whole.
Yeah, it's super interesting. I think that's a good example of a sport that was very heavy on amateur participation and not as heavy on pro participation, and also hard to
market
and yeah, super hard to monetize it for companies. And at least right now, the companies are the backbone of, you know, how World Cup racing happens. Elite teams pretty much fund the World Cups, and once it doesn't make sense for them. So I don't know. It's super hard, and I don't know what the answer is, but I do know that for a long time, I think downhill racing focused too much on pros and not as much about the amateur ridership. And I think you just need a really good balance. You go to anywhere in Europe, all the IXS Cups. I mean, I did one IXS Cup and it was just ridiculous. I got like one lap of practice because there was seriously like 800 riders. And it's like, okay, well, how is that the case? But on some of the big local races out here, the big local downhill races, you know, you have maybe 100, 150 people. So I don't know. The pendulum seems like it has been a little out of whack, but it seems like it's growing and it's healthy on.
Yeah, we got a lot of series. It'd be interesting to see if we can mimic though, like the IXS, which is the direct feeder to a World Cup. And then we can have, you know, each of these regional, the Southwest, the Southeast, you know, you got Eastern States Cup and you got, you know, the Pro GRTs. And if you could get all those to feed up into the Monster Series or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But that, you know, seems like there could be some real potential there.
Yeah.
Well, and BME's got a DH series now too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, BME, that's what I've been racing the past couple of years. And I think BME, you know, is really at a great position seize on a great opportunity, I guess is what I want to say. But yeah, with all the kind of the enduro falling away and having downhill, I think they could become a premier, you know, like the Monster Cup, if they can get some backing and some sponsors, they could become a premier race league. And, you know, if they added something like dual slalom, like how cool would that be? Right. You can back, it's like the glory days again. You can race dual slalom, downhill, and go pedal, you know, and it's like,
yeah,
you get the XC in there. And then it's like, that's, you know, across the entire nation, then you have like all the pros going to one series, which
I, right. And then all of a sudden as a brand, you know, you're way more willing to buy the big trailer and go out there and have a big pit and have a presence. And because there's 5,000 people that are walking around the pits.
Yeah.
It's a lot cheaper to fund race teams that travel together. And, you know, so I think, you know, that is another layer to it as well. We don't have.
Got to make the event.
Yeah.
For a general public. And
yeah.
Yeah, that does narrow it down to some locations. Like, you got to be a little bit closer to a big population center or whatever. But that seems to be one of the keys that we need to. And I think BME is primed to do some cool stuff like, you know, like that. So,
yeah. And the Monster Series too. So I think they both have really cool things going for them. So it'll be interesting to see if the sport grows exponentially in the next couple of years, but I think it will.
I participated in ARBA events back in the 90s, and not that I was good at it. I just had the means to be able to do it and the desire. And so like, it was interesting to like, see, like I think 3 years in a row, I came to Deer Valley, you know, back in the, I think it was 96, 97 and 98, right? Back in the heyday of ARBA. And it was interesting to see like how big that pit set up. I mean, that was back. So we're talking the era of Sean Palmer and his bus, right? And that was just such an amazing thing where ARBA at that time was pretty much like all the World Cup racers were coming to do ARBA races as well. And it was treated almost as the same. And some ARBA races were in tandem World Cups, you know? So I think it'd be so cool as a person that lived through that era to see that era come back around.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what we need is that event and that destination focus. And, you know, the UCI World Cup they called it the EWS, but now it's the EDR or whatever. I feel like it was so close to being something so good. And then it just kind of fizzled a little bit, but they had a great feeder system going where they had, you know, like wasn't the BME, but something similar, you know, like you'd go out and there was a couple on each continent and that was a feeder to the big the big leagues and then those big events over the weekend.
Yeah.
But anyway,
they did a really good job. And I think where at least I was a little disappointed with it was the coverage that they were doing. They were doing like the Queen Stage coverage rather than the, you know, it's kind of uneventful to watch a stage that it does mean something, but you finish watching and you still don't know kind of what happened. You're like, okay, I guess I'll come back. I'll go to Pink Bike tomorrow and see who won. It's like, it's a little underwhelming. And so it's a hard code to crack. I don't know how you do it because I could, you know, maybe you set up on the last stage and you have like, hey, this guy is down by a second, but he's going to go into the hot seat if he wins by 1.1. I don't know.
Yeah, it's really hard to crack, but I always go back to, and I don't know why I'm the only one, maybe just because I'm a fan of rally racing. Mm. And so rally racing to me is the same format as enduro. And I love watching the rally highlights, you know, every year you got, you know, all this, you know, they go all over the world. They do really cool stages and they're all time stages, just like an enduro race. And anyway, there might be something there where you could just, you know, you do really good coverage, but you make sure you tell the story of the race. Anyway, yeah, I think they got on something weird with the Queen Stage though, because I hated racing them too. I'm like, I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
It's like, that's a downhill race. Go over there and do that.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah.
Well, I don't remember. I think this is the name of the show. If I get it wrong, so be it, because people that watched it will understand. But you know, years ago, a handful of years ago, Red Bull had On Track. I think it was On Track. That's the name of the show that I'm thinking of. And I think that coverage, while it obviously wasn't a timely coverage, it was the closest thing to what I'm going to say proper coverage for enduro should be, because it told the story. I mean, On Track did focus on just a handful of, like, they had their one or two people that were like the focus of the show that got followed around mainly. But like, that was really good, in my opinion, really good enduro coverage. You know, so if you could blend that with what you just talked about with the rally car.
At GRC, they do a great job. And it's like, you know, they get the coverage out live sometimes, or it's like right after the race, and you can do both ways. But anyway, GRC does a great job. You know, whose car got flipped over and totally wrecked. Like, it's like, yeah. Like, let's watch stuff that people want to watch, guys. Like, yeah. Go to the gnarliest spot and get all the carnage. Like, let's, like, that's the point of rally racing.
Well, and the whole enduro thing kind of, it somewhat baffles me because it is in certain areas really popular still. I think it's unfortunate for what's happened on the World Cup level, or what I'm going to, I guess it's EDR now, like you're saying, but EWS is what I'm going to always refer to it as, because there's a handful of races where I live. We'll use Marquette, Michigan, for example. Marquette's fall enduro sold out last year in under 2 hours. We're talking hundreds and hundreds of spots.
Oh, yeah.
It's incredible.
You know? I think it makes sense as a race format. It's just people want to ride their bikes. And we've seen a lot too, like, and I've ridden racing it for 5 years, so it's transformed a lot. And, you know, different series go, oh, we want 2 days with all backcountry, or we want all lift serve. And so kind of, it's always finding it's the spirit of enduro, which maybe that is the spirit of enduro, right? Like, it's just, it depends on the race event. Like, this one's is all lift serve and this one's only backcountry. And it's like, you know, that's just the way it is, which is cool. That's great. You know what I mean? Like, it's a mixed bag of what you get. But I think it's that most people have an enduro bike and most people like to ride their bike for a couple, you know, multiple trails. And anyway, I love enduro, but I loved going to New Zealand the last couple of years and then the races here in the US, and like, that stuff is amazing. But when I go to Europe and I race in the guys' backyards, it's like, it's not, I would get my butt worked.
Yeah. And I think that didn't help US racing for a long time either. So yeah, it does feel like we're on an upswing though. So I'm excited to see what happens the next couple of years. There's a lot of momentum with it.
Yeah, and I think that the talent that we have coming up right now too will be a huge factor.
For sure. I mean, yeah, you have Ryan Pinkerton, Asa.
Asa's so fast.
Yeah, I mean, dude, there's some great riders coming up. So that'll help.
Yeah, it's too bad Asa crashed at Windrock, but he'll be back. He's young.
Yeah, he will be back. So hopefully sooner than later.
I got a question that I typically try to ask everybody, and that is a mountain bike specific community related question, which is, if you had to move from the community you live in right now, which is a pretty awesome community in terms of having access to mountain biking, where would you go, or what amenities are like kind of things you have to have in terms of stuff that makes a great mountain bike community for you? And we'll have Rob go first.
Oh yeah. What makes a great mountain bike community? Well, for me, I like going out and riding with all sorts of people and riding all sorts of trails. And that's, Utah's great for that. We got 8 bike parks within like an hour of my house. And then I live kind of out on the west side, and I can basically ride in the desert all year round, right out from my door. So I'd say riding from my door is just, that's unbeatable, honestly. So, but anyway, I've been looking at spots personally. I would love to go to Idaho and live right on the, you know, in the Tetons. I just love that spot. Just that mountain range, as far as US mountain ranges go, it has my heart. But then North Carolina, my buddies moved out there. One of my best friends moved out there 2 years ago. So I've been riding out there and then racing with Windrock being out there. And just that Asheville area is super nice, man. You can't beat it. So one of those two spots is where I'd go next, probably.
What about you, Joey?
That's funny. I was going to say Asheville too. But, you know, I guess kind of along the same lines as Rob, to me, the riding is, you know, half the riding and half the crew that you're riding with as well. And of course, that makes me partial to Salt Lake, because that's where all my friends are and that's where, you know, our riding crew is. But man, everybody out there is just super cool, super laid back, very nice. Trails are great and you can ride year round, which is also great. So,
yeah, no doubt why Aaron and Nico and everybody moves down there.
Yeah. But, I didn't understand for a while, but I'm starting to understand.
Yeah, it's a great spot too. But I also I'm a big mountain guy too. I like the snow. I like just the size of the Wasatch and the Tetons and stuff too. Even Asheville, I'm like, oh, these mountains are cool, but yeah. Anyway.
What about you? Where would you go?
I don't know, because I haven't been to enough places yet. I haven't had that. I want to get to Tasmania more than any place at the moment.
That's a choice spot. it's really, really laid back. Like, I would say it's kind of like living in Wyoming, but they've got just the two of the best bike parks that I've ever ridden. Like Medina is a proper bike park. Like, you know, 20-minute run and stuff all the way at the top, and then just well-built stuff at the bottom. And then that other spot, Blue Derby. Yeah. They're building that stuff. It's super cool, man. That little town is really quaint, really fun. And yeah, the slabs and stuff out there are bonkers. So I went down for the EWS racing, and I was like, oh my gosh, this is so sick. So.
Yeah, I was just down in Tennessee, Georgia, and North Carolina a couple weeks ago for the PTBA conference. And so I drove down and hit Walden's Ridge in Tennessee, and then spent 4 days in Georgia for the conference. And it had always been kind of a dream of mine to be able to meet Glenn Jacobs in person. I've had him on the podcast, but you know, it was like this where we're on Zoom, and Glenn was the keynote speaker at the conference. And so I'm like, yeah, this would be great. I get to meet Glenn. Well, little did I know that I'd actually get to meet Glenn, go to dinner with Glenn, hang out with him like the whole time, just totally coincidentally, like not even purposely, just happened to be at the same place at the same time, random times, and then go mountain biking with him. And so we talked a ton about Blue Derby, because that was World Trail. His company was the company that built out Blue Derby. And so now there's a big push to like hopefully host a PTBA conference in Tasmania in 2025, maybe 2026, who knows. But I've had it on my radar to go to Tasmania ever since meeting Simon French, who has Medina Bike Park. I keep wanting to say Steve French. I know it's Simon, but I want to say Steve French, which you guys might get the reference for that.
No, I don't know.
You ever watched Trailer Park Boys?
Oh yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Early on in the Trailer Park Boys, Bubbles found a mountain lion that was eating all their cannabis and named him Steve French.
There you go.
Yeah, I was watching like the later seasons of that, so I don't know if I saw that.
I would recommend going to Tasmania though. And stop in New Zealand too. That spot's on it. New Zealand is just the spot you want to go to.
Yeah.
And Tasmania is not really a spot you want to go to, but they've done such a good job with bike parks that it's like, oh, okay, I gotta go.
I loved Rotorua. I had so much fun out there.
Well, and they were like early on, you know, they've been around for a long time. They were way, way ahead of the curve, right?
Yeah, Queenstown, Rotorua have been there a while.
Yeah.
That New Zealand is just such a cool spot. But then the Medina Bike Park in Blue Derby, they've done such a good job. It is just a destination now to go to Tasmania. So
bucket list place too.
Yeah.
I mean, New Zealand is as well, but Tasmania,
I mean, I would say New Zealand is more of the bucket list spot as far as like, you know, the views and the picturesque scenery and like, you know, all the stuff you go and you see in New Zealand is it's phenomenal. And then you go to Tasmania and it's like, okay, it's a couple of farmers' fields and,
yeah. And sick riding.
And sick riding. So
that's awesome. Anyway,
that's my 2 cents though. You should go to Bullet.
Before we wrap this thing up, is there any topics that we didn't cover that you guys want to get into?
No, I mean,
yeah, I don't know. I
can't think about anything.
Yeah, else, any feedback you have for us, please let me know. Please let us know. We're working hard to get more destinations and more cool things to do and help spread the word and, you know, do whatever. So any suggestions you or anybody else has, please hit us up. So we're just trying to get people out riding and more spots.
Yeah, there are going to be a bunch of new spots coming on. So I think that's been the biggest complaint so far. It's like,
yeah,
we're like, we got 30 spots. That's a lot of spots, guys. But they're all like, we want more. So we're giving you more. There's a bunch in the pipe. Yeah, just trying to get the word out. So we're just here. We're just riders. So hit us up if you have any questions.
I got a question. I don't even know why this didn't pop my radar earlier. Is this like a full annual pass or what's like the dates on it? So like January 1 to December 31, is that how this whole thing works? That should have been asked like right away.
Yeah, maybe I should have said that too. But yeah, it's a full year. This year, obviously, it started in March, but yeah, it'll go till December 31st, and then you can renew for next year, January through December. Which, yeah, honestly, the economics on it's a great deal if you're going to ride at least two spots. Like, it just makes a ton of sense. So that's what we tried to make it a no brainer.
Yeah, and it's right now the rate. We also didn't talk about the price. Why are we totally missed that? So right now it's $249, correct? $249.99 is that the current price? And so, and then it's eventually going to go up to $300 for your like regular standard price, correct?
Yeah, we kind of left that in there. We're trying to keep the price at $249.99. We had some early access pricing at $199. We're trying to keep it at $249.99, but depending on what parks and how many we get on, we may need to bump it up. But that hasn't happened yet, so
trying to find the happy medium of making sure that the destinations are taken care of. And, you know, and all the riders are getting a good deal. So trying to find that middle ground.
Yeah, that's a great way to, you know, we want to make sure that the, you know, the bike parks aren't giving away 2 free days. You know, we're still giving them a good yield, a good cut. And, but then it's still a good deal for the riders. You know, you're not having to go, you know, 2 free days here is, you know, gets you your pass paid for at, you know, at least 1 or 2 trips. So
for sure. I mean, even if you go to just the Asheville area, you got Ratkanuga and Ride Rock Creek. You got 4 days at two parks within 30, 40, well, maybe it's really weird how close everything is there, but how long it takes to actually drive between like Brevard. And I was just at Ride Rock Creek when I was down in the southeast and I got stuck on I don't know if it was Google or what, but I got on a dirt road that was, I'm thankful I didn't come into another vehicle because it was really tight. I don't know if you guys had that experience or not.
My Google Maps takes me on some dirt roads occasionally, but I got on some gnarly ones in Idaho last time I went up there. But anyway,
I took I think it was a little bit like maybe 5 minute longer out back to Brevard, and it was all paved roads.
Yeah, I made the mistake one time of actually, I was racing at Rock Creek for the National last year. And, you know, as far as the, you know, I'd been out to Asheville a couple times, but just looking at like the Airbnb map, as the crow flies, you're not far, but I rented a little Airbnb right on Canoga Road, right on Canoga, like right by Canoga. I was like, sick, we'll be able to ride some Canoga and then we'll just drive down to, but then it was like a 30-minute drive every morning to the race. And I was like, gosh, dang.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, as you look at it on a map where it's flat and it looks like you're 5 minutes away.
Oh yeah. No, it's, I mean, I think you can actually pedal there faster than you can drive there, because you can actually pedal this dirt road behind.
Oh yeah.
Into from Canoga.
That's pretty cool.
To Rock Creek. So.
Yeah. I mean, just so to bring it back to the economics of this, you got 4 days in that zone, you know, for $250, you go 2.5 hours from there and then you're at Windrock.
Yeah. I mean, it's super easy in a lot of different spots to pay it off, and
yeah,
just a couple weekend.
That third day discounted too is huge for people. And we're trying to get the word out about that. And then, you know, if you do need food or lodging, you know, you can use your pass, and that actually, that adds up quick too. So.
Well, guys, I appreciate you hopping on, especially like last minute.
Yeah, you bet.
All good. It's been fun chatting with you and cool to finally connect. Well, I really appreciate it, dude. And yeah, feel free to reach out. We'll definitely hit you up when we're up in the UP. And
no, 100%.
If ever in Salt Lake, be sure to hit us up.
Need a tour guide.
For sure. Yeah, we'll definitely have to stay in touch for the spring when you guys come this direction, because we'll get you the goods.
Yeah.
Well, you guys have a great weekend.
Yeah, you too. And yeah, we'll stay in touch. So
thank you very much. It was nice meeting you too as well. Virtually, we're going to meet in person soon.
Yep, exactly. Good to meet you.
Thank you for listening. If you like what you've heard, please take the time to share these shows with others. Sharing these shows will help create awareness of both the guests who have taken the time to be on the show and the podcast series itself. Also, if you're new to the Trail Effect podcast, check out our ever-expanding library of episodes. If you listen to the Trail Effect podcast on Apple or Spotify, please don't forget to leave a rating and review, as this is one of the best ways to show your support for the Trail Effect podcast. Also, don't forget to check out Cooley Creative at www.dojustsendit.com. For additional ways to help support the Trail Effect podcast, check out the affiliate links tab at the Trail Effect website, where you'll find links to Kettle Mountain Apparel, Worldwide Cyclery, and Trail One Components. By using the affiliate links found at www.traileffectpodcast.com, a small commission will come back to the podcast, which will help keep this thing going. This podcast has been edited and produced by Evolution Trail Services. Thank you again for listening.